I think it's an Italian beef Friday, Pete. What do you think? I'm going to go with Mr. Beef on Orleans number one. I'm going to go with Portillo's of any of the 8 million locations in Chicago number two. I go wet with extra jardiniere because if it's the Wintrust business lunch, you have to be eating. So joining us now is Dr. Vishal Mehta, my good friend who I call Vish. Vish, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you?
Good. Is there any chance you have an Italian beef and fries in front of you right now?
I do not, but you have planted the seed in my head, and I think I am going to run out and get one right after the show.
How would you take your Italian beef? Would you take it wet, hot peppers, sweet peppers? How do you take it?
No, you know, if I am in the store and going to eat it right away, definitely wet and everything on it. If I am taking it to go, it gets a touch too soggy, so on the side, and then I make that decision a little later.
And I've seen, you know, you dress very well. You don't want to get juicy beef juice on those expensive shirts that you wear. So
that's never a good look.
So going into the business of medicine, so you are the president and lead doctor for Fox Valley Orthopedics. Tell us what that is.
Sure. So Fox Valley Orthopedics is a full-service orthopedic organization. So we have seven clinics and expanding in the western and northwestern suburbs of Chicago, full surgery center, urgent care, MRI, DEXA scan, really anything that you need to take care of your orthopedic care from the very beginning, first visit, right through surgery and right through therapy afterwards.
And where are, so you're in the west and northwest suburbs. Where's the south end? Where's the north end? Where are you, for our listeners out there, where can I go if I've hurt my shoulder or my knee today in the rain? Where am I going?
Yeah, so our main campus is in Geneva. We have two large buildings there with the surgery center and an MRI.
Geneva, Illinois, Vish, right? Not Switzerland.
Geneva, Illinois. Thanks for the clarifying question.
Just want to make
sure. Western suburbs of Chicago, Geneva, and from that office, we service, you know, all the way down to the south suburbs, Joliet, all the way out west to Iowa. And then we have offices further north in Elgin, Algonquin, and then east to Barrington. So really located in the western and northwestern suburbs, but we service the entire Chicagoland metro.
And you know, when people talk about location and commute for anything, I always say if you're getting the best to drive for an hour really isn't a big deal.
Yeah, we like to think so. And one of the things the pandemic has done is allowed us to have touch, you know, virtually with people who we previously couldn't talk to. So, for example, we have people out of state all the time and downstate who we have video conversations with. They get to know us, know what we have to offer, and then they make the trip up for their surgery. So it's a different world post-COVID than it was before as well.
So let's talk about medicine during the pandemic and during remote work and all that good stuff. Obviously, doctors can't work remotely, but at the same time, when people really didn't understand what COVID-19 was or how it could be transmitted, a lot of non-essential procedures weren't done. What happened to your business in April, May, June, and where's it at today?
Yeah, it's been a heck of a ride these past 18 months. So early on, it was, you know, none of us knew what was going to happen. The world was collapsing, sky was falling, and we were just hunkering down. We stopped doing all surgery. We were prepared to do our part, not even as orthopedic surgeons, but just as healthcare workers. So myself and others had signed up at McCormick to volunteer and treat COVID patients. And fortunately, that never came to fruition. And we were prepared to do triage in our parking lots and just, you know, take care of whoever came through. Fortunately, it never came to that. And then we transitioned to this phase where we were only doing emergency surgery and basically seeing everybody via video. And then something actually very interesting happened. After that, the state was still shut down. But we had a whole bunch of people that were home and they had rotator cuff tears, meniscal issues, and they wanted to have surgery. They didn't have to travel anymore. And it was much easier for them to fit that surgery in, have their rotator cuff repaired when they're sitting in front of a computer having Zoom calls rather than being on the road. So as soon as we got the green light, we saw this huge influx of patients that wanted to have surgery when they weren't traveling. And you know, some of that was the pent-up demand. And then in that period, our older population still did not feel comfortable, so all the total joints, for the most part, were still not being done. And then we got to this phase where the older population got vaccinated and was comfortable, and now they're all back. There's pent-up demand. And that brings us to the current phase where we're seeing all of that demand back, and we're seeing this explosion in sports. So we have multiple different sports overlapping. You know, our football players had a spring season followed immediately by going back to summer camp and a fall season looming. And that's overlapping with other seasons that typically would be more spaced out. So we're seeing just a ton of overuse injuries, a ton of ACLs, a ton of shoulder problems from, you know, lifting too much, throwing too much, and not resting. So that's where we are today.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think doctors are like, you know, not in the same vein. I don't mean it this way, but like almost like municipality workers where we just expect them to be going. And there's a business of medicine that if you guys aren't doing elective procedures, you've got employees, you have rents, you have the same things that everybody else has. But when it becomes the medicine, I think the common person just thinks everything will be exactly the same as it was. But business has really changed in your field, isn't it?
It has, and you hit the nail on the head. You know, we're in a capitalist country, and I think that's a good thing for healthcare. It makes us strive to provide the best care to our patients in the most financially responsible way, and we're incentivized to do that. And we do have to run a business. We're not doing anybody any good if we go out of business, right? Then we're taking care of zero patients. Well, so I think COVID has brought that to the forefront where we really need to provide very efficient, excellent healthcare, but we need to do it economically for the good of our patient and the good of society as a whole, right? Healthcare costs are out of control. Nobody's debating that.
Dr. Vish Mehta, president of Fox Valley Orthopedics, not only a great, great surgeon, but also a super nice guy. Makes me want to go tear an ACL or hurt my shoulder and come in and see you if I don't see you sooner. Thanks for joining us, Vish. Have a great weekend.
Hey, Tom, you too. Thanks so much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Tom Gimbel back on the Wintrust Business Lunch, filling in for John Williams. As I started on Monday, I say I've moved from 7th to 6th favorite fill-in host. So I'm feeling really good about that. And to answer all of the people who are tweeting and texting and messaging me, a Philly cheesesteak is not an Italian beef, for the record. A gyro isn't even in the same, it's like saying is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich an Italian beef. So I just want to make sure we're clear. An Italian beef is an Italian beef. And if you call it something else, it's just not it. You don't call water milk. You don't call water Coca-Cola. You call it water. And now we have one of the great women business leaders in our dear city of Chicago, Sarah Alter. And Sarah, who I've known for several years, is president and CEO of the Network of Executive Women. And how are you doing today, Sarah?
I am absolutely fantastic, Tom. And just so the record states, you are my number one favorite fill-in host.
There we go. That'll seeing as that I'm not hosting next week, it will not get you back on. But in the spirit of Network of Executive Women, I do want to give a shout out to a dear friend of mine, Maureen Hurston, who's turning 41 today. And she happens to be COO of LaSalle Network, which I don't know that much about, but I've heard it's a great company, Pete. Sarah, in all seriousness, tell us, our listeners and me, about the Network of Executive Women, what you've been doing there.
No, and Tom, thank you so much for inviting me on to chat with you today and to share our story. We are an amazing and impactful nonprofit. We're a 501c3, and our mission is to advance all women in the workplace.
How great. It's crazy that I love that you do it, and I love that we have it, and it still amazes me sometimes that we need it, and we do need it, but we need that push, right?
Yeah. Oh, now more than ever. With all that unfolded, right, in this past 15 months of what I call cray-cray, there are two stats out there which are just incredibly disturbing. McKinsey did a study, McKinsey Consulting, everybody knows that name. They said that in the past 15 months, we have lost 6 years of the progress that women had made in the spirit of gender equality. That's just alone in the United States. The World Economic Forum, globally, we lost 36 years.
Now,
of all the progress that had been made.
So let me ask you a question on that. And to clear up for our audience, there's nothing, nonprofit is great business, and there are the best nonprofit mm-hmm. leaders in the world are located in Chicago. However, I do want to make it clear to everybody that your background is not a nonprofit. You were vice president with Discover Card. You were CMO of General Growth Properties, which in its heyday was a boon of a company here in Chicago. And then you entered this role. So you understand corporate just as well, if not better than nonprofit, since you've been doing that, just to give a little bit of background on you. But
thank you.
When we go and you say we've lost 6 years, explain that to me, because I look at it and see that so many of the jobs lost are service jobs, restaurants, hotel, hospitality, that were primarily female-based. But in the corporate America, I would think that those jobs weren't lost. Am I wrong?
No. So you saw, to your point, you know, the preponderance of the impact, you did see it happen in the service-oriented type positions and organizations. And then sadly, along with that, leaders of color, right? So you saw an inordinate amount of detriment or burden on, you know, diverse leaders and in those types of roles. But in the corporate world, there's another survey just released. 2 out of 3 corporate women are now saying, you know what, like, I'm going to change my job. I'm going to, you know, quit my job. You know, I need to find an organization and a role that now allows me to, you know, manage this whole collision of life and work and all of these new dynamics. You know, it's a hybrid world, right? You know, we're a mix of, hey, you're going to have to go back into the office and you're going to have to continue to manage at home. And, you know, hopefully as we see, you know, cities and regions and states and whatnot opening up, we may be able to get back to a more normal lifestyle. But in all that unfolded this past year, year and a half, people's expectations have changed. And now you see female leaders saying, you know what, I do want to have my cake, and I do want to eat it too.
And so how does that work? How do you, we've got about 45 seconds left, Sarah. How does that work from a standpoint of the woman who says, I'll just grind it out and go 90 hours. I don't care about my family, or I don't have a family, or I hate my husband, or the man who isn't the primary caretaker at home,
right,
and or is single, and they want to work more. I mean, at the end of the day, there is an output variance, right? That the person who does the best work in the highest volume probably deserves to get the rewards, right?
Right. No, absolutely. And what needs to happen is companies, and they are doing it now, need to reimagine. They need to transform. It's like we can't go back to the way, you know, work was defined, you know, 15 months ago. You know, the top talent in the female community and in the diverse community, they're now saying, yeah, I'm not going back. You know, I now need to work with an organization and I need a leader who's going to realize that, you know, I can be just as productive at home as I am coming into the office. And I think individuals and teams and organizations have seen it. I mean, you see organizations now that are saying, hey, you know what, I used to mandate that you travel and you be, you know, with your customer, you know, on the site. And organizations have figured out how to do it even more cost effectively and even more productively, allowing people then to be able to work from home or have a hybrid approach. And so when you hear, you know, leaders out there saying, oh, yeah, no, the only way I'm going to get optimal productivity is if everybody comes back to the office. Not true.
And there you have it, from the leader of women and the advancement of women in the executive and corporate ranks, Sarah Alter. Thanks for joining us, CEO of the Network of Executive Women. Have a great weekend. We've got the business of law coming up. And a friend of mine who is one of the premier attorneys in the city of Chicago, if not the country, Pete Flowers, is going to join us on the line. But Pete's also a good golfer, and I wanted to give a shout out and a happy birthday to Joseph Harrigan, who's celebrating his 21st birthday. He's a Division III golfer at RPI College in New York, but he hails from the Chicagoland area, and he is an awesome golfer, and there's rumors that he's about 4-1 odds to win the Barstool Open. next week. So happy birthday to him. Pete, how are you? Getting back to more business.
Good, Tom. How are you?
I am great, my friend. So you are one of Chicago's very own, kind of like WGN, undergraduate from Loyola, law degree from DePaul, and it's called the Doctor of Law, but you always never refer to yourself as doctor. So maybe we can start that today. How are you doing? Well,
I am doing well. I am Chicago through and through. Grew up in the suburbs and school and lived here my whole life. So always excited. Love Chicago. Love WGN.
And you are the managing partner for Myers and Flowers, a personal injury law firm. But I really wanted to talk to you about this explosion out in Rockton, the chemical explosion. And it bothers me for a second, because now the front page of the paper is all about the building collapse in Miami. And it's like, everybody forgets about a tragedy as soon as the next one comes. And that doesn't do great for a town like Rockton that's small and pretty far away from Chicago, still within the noise of our, or can hear our WGN. But, you know, they need help. And just if you could shed some light on what's going on that for you.
Yeah, so you make a great point, because I woke up this morning and obviously saw the collapse in Miami, but people don't realize how big of a disaster this truly is. I mean, this was an explosion that occurred in 7 a.m. on June 14th. This plant makes lubricating greases, had all kinds of chemicals there. I was literally in St. Charles, about 65 miles away, and I had walked out of my office and could actually see the plume of smoke traveling. What's in the air up there, and what's in the ground up there, and what's in the water up there, because it's on a river, the Rock River, it remains to be seen, but it has traveled not only from Rockton to Roscoe, but all through Rockford. There's pieces of debris all over the yards. It's very concerning as to what this is doing to the environment. We have literally hundreds of people calling our office every day asking for advice and information. Now we're starting to see people exhibiting symptoms of respiratory problems. This needs to continue to be reported, because this company, on top of it, this should have never happened. This was not an accident. This was a fire that could have been prevented, and it's a tragedy. And who knows what happens if it gets into the water and starts traveling, you know, down the Rock River that feeds into the Mississippi.
And I was reading the paper, and it said that they don't even know if Kwame Raoul and the state attorney general might even do anything on a criminal front. So without lawyers like you who are going to represent people who currently are feeling effects, or later on may feel it, because, right, this is like anything else, asbestos and other stuff, where you don't know what the effects are going to be 6 months, a year, many years out, right?
You don't know what the effects are going to be 6 months, 2 days, 2 years, 10 years. Plus, you don't know whether your own property is clean enough for your children to play on. And I represent someone who has a 2-year-old that called me this morning and says, "Can I have my 2-year-old playing outside in my yard? The company just came and cleaned up the pieces they found." And I frankly told her, "There's no assurance that your ground is clean." These cases that I've handled in the past in other states, the ground needs to be remediated, literally removed. So there is an enormous amount of work that needs to be done up there by this company. And once again, this shouldn't have happened. There was a fire in the building. Their sprinkler system wasn't operational. They had a bunch of chemicals that shouldn't have been on the plant. This is something that shouldn't happen. But going back to your first point, this is a disaster up there. This is an environmental disaster that needs to be followed by the press so that this company is held accountable.
Yeah, I think it's disappointing, right? Because with the cutbacks at the Tribune newspaper, with the Sun-Times being not what it once was, that we need to get things like this that happen to stay in the public eye, because otherwise, especially, I mean, if this were in the middle of downtown Chicago, imagine all the hoopla. It would be on the news continually with pictures of it every day. But being out in Rockton, right, it's forgotten. I Googled it today, 11 days later, and it wasn't even in the top three things when I tried to find, because I couldn't remember Rockton. And I did explosion in Illinois, and a bunch of other stuff came up. And I was like, this is unbelievable. Right. It's only been 11 days.
Right. That's why I felt lucky to be able to be on WGN today and talk about this, because this, you know, this also puts pressure on the counties, the state, et cetera, to make sure that this is taken care of properly. Because this company, you know, also has plants in France. And in September of 2019, a similar explosion occurred there. So this seems to be a systemic problem with this company, which, by the way, is ultimately owned by Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett. So this is something that needs a full investigation. This is something that needs our system, the civil law system involved. And most importantly, people need answers. People that live up there need answers. And, you know, something that we'll deal with down the road is the value of these people's property after this. Is it, what is it? It's probably going to go down. I can't imagine people wanting to go in and buy houses up there when they're not sure whether the ground is safe. And, so this is a big deal.
Yeah, and I mean, even you say real estate tax, and I was going to ask you about the real estate property value. I was going to ask you, so I'm glad you mentioned that. And even the fact of, you know, if they don't decide to rebuild there, a lot of people move there for this company, for this job. They choose to live there, and now they don't have that opportunity. So where can people, if they live in Rockton or that surrounding area of relatives, how can they get a hold of you, Pete?
My office number is 630-232-6333, or you can send me an email at pjf@myers-flowers.com. We also plan tomorrow, I'm going to be up in Rockton, the location to be determined, but we're going to be up there tomorrow to try and provide as much information as we can in the afternoon, kind of have an open house for folks that are interested in getting some news on where things are at and what they should be worried about.
Well, I appreciate the information and you looking out for the little guy, Pete, and, you know, let people say what they will about the lawyer jokes, but when you need them, it's like the police department. You really need them, and glad that you're there representing the little guy on this. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tom. Great show you have.
Thanks. And now to Steve Grzanich and the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Fulton Market building that houses Google is being sold for $357 million. That's the second largest real estate deal for the former Meatpacking District. The sale price for the 1K Fulton building is about $672 per square foot. Google's decision to move to Fulton Market is seen by analysts as a key driver in making it one of Chicago's hottest areas. It's also a hopeful sign for Chicago's office market, which reached record levels of vacancy during the COVID-19 pandemic as many office workers stayed home. The Chicago Tribune will temporarily cut local and feature pages by 20%, move up editorial deadlines, and pause most special sections. Cranes reports the changes are the result of open positions and vacations at the company's design and production studio, where the newspaper pages are designed. Staff count was down 25% as of June 20th. The changes also come as newsrooms throughout the company experience a mass exodus after the new owner, Alden Global Capital, offered buyouts to employees. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now to a man who very well may be doing the business of food from the bathroom, Steve Alexander.
Not far away. Thank you, Mr. Gimble. It's Mr. Fizz Friday, and he's talking about vacations. We are planning vacations, going on vacations, so what do you do about your garden and your yard and your house plants while you're gone?
And there are a lot of things that need to be done outside because you don't want the place to look like you're gone.
So let's begin with the garden and all that food you're growing. Find somebody to pick it for you.
We used to have some good friends that owned a restaurant here in town, and when we were gone, they were very courteous and kind to go out and pick as many tomatoes and squash and whatever they could get their hands on as they could get while we were gone. We were glad to have them do that.
The whole yard needs to have water, and Jim says these next few days may bring some good rain, but
that's not going to last forever, and the long rain forecast says that by the end of this month, we're going to be back in the hot and dry.
As for the houseplants, yeah, they're a little bit like cats.
They can take a week of being by themselves, set them in a cool, shaded place in your house, not in full sun, and they'll be fine. And you might set them in trays of water or even in the bathtub with shallow water. Not deep enough to flood them, just deep enough so that they can pick up moisture if they need it.
And finally, there's the lawn. Mow it before you go. And if you're going to be gone for a while, find somebody else to do it. But Mr. Fizz says it's important that with all of the vacation help you're getting, make sure it's clear what you want them to do and how you want them to do it.
Once upon a time, I was hired by a guy that said, go cut my grass while I'm gone. When I got back, he said, well, I don't do that way, and I'm not going to pay you. That wasn't nice.
That wasn't nice. It's our longtime gardening guru, Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. At the Chicago Board of Trade, traders continue to keep an eye on the weather. There's an old saying that rain makes grain. But, you know, there can be too much of a good thing. In parts of Illinois and Missouri, the rain gauges have been full over the last day or two, 5 to 7 inches in the past 24 to 36 hours. Other areas got little or nada. The big mover today is soybean oil, down 7% after the Supreme Court ruled some refineries can be exempted from blending renewables like soy oil and corn ethanol into gasoline and diesel. At the Chicago Board of Trade, soybeans are down 17, corn is off about 14, and wheat is down about 9 cents. Today is National Strawberry Parfait Day. Also, it is National Catfish Day. If I may, here's a tip from an experienced catfish eater. Don't forget the hush puppies or the dill pickle. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
What's interesting is after you go to Ticketmaster, wherever you buy your tickets, and then all of a sudden they start sending you on Google and social media ads for everything. How do they know that, Pete? How do they know? Well, Google was supposed to eliminate all cookies on your computer. So for online, being able to sell your privacy and all your data. And in the front page of the Wall Street Journal today, Google delays cookie removal to late 23. And I'm pretty sure that has nothing to do with the cookies at Jerish Bakery, Pete. And when you hear that happening, it's like, wait a second. I love the entrepreneur. I'm not the anti-billionaire guy. I think you risk your business no matter what. You start a company, you're Jeff Bezos. Maybe you should do a little bit more good with your money, but you know what? You earned it. You're entitled to it. But we've got a company like Google that is selling all of our data all over the place. And we finally figured it out, right? Governments figured it out. The ordinary citizens figured it out. And they come back and say, we're going to delay it till 23. And which blows my mind. And it said, I'll read this exactly. Google said the delay would give it more time to get publishers, advertisers, and regulators comfortable with the new technologies it is developing. I read that. Now, I happen to be a translator, Pete. I don't know if you knew that. And my translator is, it gives them more time to collect more data to sell it. Right? Can they get, you know, they don't have enough money at Google, right? The rules have been set. No more doing this, and they're delaying it. So we'll see what happens on big business. But that kind of irritated me, where they say they're going to do something, and then they say, well, we'll make a few more bucks, and then we'll do it. The other big thing that's going on that was passed, and I know our WGN listener base is into this, is the infrastructure deal. And I know it's been talked about on several other shows this week, but I think it's worth stating what this is going to do for the economy. And it got bipartisan support. So for those of you who are younger and don't know what it was like in the 90s or the 80s when there just wasn't this vitriol, which I go back to social media, quite frankly. I think it was all there, but people weren't on social media trying to get instant likes and gratification for calling somebody a name or saying they'll never do business with them, that they kept it behind closed doors and it would come up at a press conference or at a convention and then they'd never insult anybody again and it would lose steam. Now nothing loses steam on social media. But we've got a bipartisan infrastructure bill, okay? And so it's going to be $1 trillion, which is less than what the Democrats wanted, a little bit more than what the Republicans wanted, $109 billion on roads and highways. You don't have a job? You lost your job during the pandemic? There are jobs available. $109 billion on roads and highways. $15 billion on electrical vehicle infrastructure. You love a Tesla? You want a Tesla? You want a Chevy Volt? You want whatever you want electric, this is for that. For the next phase, for the next 30 years of vehicles, getting off of the Texas T, as Steve Alexander would say, right? $15 billion, $65 billion toward broadband, right? That we are going to have faster internet for everybody around the country from rural to downtown, that you're not going to lose a connection on your phone or your computer when you walk from one end of your office or apartment to the other. This is better for America. It's better for our citizens. It's the infrastructure. It's what happened in the 30s, 40s, and 50s of rebuilding our roads, our highways, our trains, and we're going to get this. That means if you want a job, there's no excuse not to have one. right? This is great news, and if this isn't a business story, it's not politics anymore. This is business. $1 billion going into the pockets of American citizens. So that's what I got.